Members, I call this meeting the Judiciary Committee to order. Please take your seats. Chair recognizes a quorum. First order of business is approval of the January 22nd minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes? Chair Constantine moves the minutes from January 22nd. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. For the minutes of January 22nd, which now stand approved. Members, the second order of business we have today is the district court's overview. Today we have two presentations. So if district judges could hop on up. And members, when I first came to this committee, I had been practicing law, and so anyone who comes up to testify is a witness, right? But no, in committee, they're testifiers, which I still don't get, but it is what it is. So the testifiers who took the testifiers table, welcome to the committee. Members, they'll present to you what they do as district judges, but obviously it's a huge chunk of the judiciary in Minnesota, and please introduce yourself for the committee and take it away.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Members of the committee, good morning. My name is Tracy Warner. I'm a district court judge in the 2nd Judicial District at St. Paul Ramsey County. I am also here as president of the Minnesota District Judges Association. With me, go ahead, you can make your own introduction.
I'm Jonathan Jasper. I'm a judge in Anoka County in the 10th District. The 10th District of Judges is the kind of the northern suburban loop of the state.
Jonathan is chair of a couple of, one important committee of the District Judges Association, Pensions and Benefits. I should also introduce Judge John Hoffman from the 10th District. Judge Hoffman is the vice president of the District Judges Association. He'll be taking over October 1st of this year as the president of the association. I want to, again, thank you for the opportunity to present on behalf of the District Judges Association, but personally as a district court judge in the state of Minnesota. I want to talk a little bit about myself, about the organization. Judge Jasper is going to talk about some of the committee work. We'll field any questions anytime. Please feel free to ask any questions that you have. I would also indicate that Ms. Ganani has our information, contact information. We'd certainly be happy to field any questions. Can't guarantee we'd get back to you right away, but we'd certainly be willing to answer any questions you have. I've been a district court judge for going on 22 years. I started in January of 1998. Again, I'm in St. Paul, Ramsey County. I have deep roots in not only this city, but in this community, and I use the broad term community. I was born and raised in St. Paul. I'm number 8 of 9 kids. My dad was a legislator. He served in the Minnesota State Senate from 1950 to 1962. I don't remember those years. I was 3 when he retired. But then in 1963, he became a district court judge. He served in Ramsey County from 1963 to 1987. I have deep roots in this community, Big C community. I'm humbled to serve the people of the state of Minnesota as a judge in the 2nd District. It's also an honor. As a district court judge for over 21 years, I've handled just about every type of case. In the 2nd District, our case flow management system is done in what we would call a block system. So you do one type of case for 3 years. My full-time job right now is a judge serving primarily in the juvenile, child protection, and juvenile delinquency area. Again, I'd be happy to answer any questions there. I'm here today thanks to my colleagues, and that goes for all of us. The legislative session is a difficult one for us to find time to come here to talk to you. I had a trial today that I continued not to come here because the lawyers requested a continuance to try to resolve a pretty contentious child protection issue. I gave them the time that they asked for. So thankfully I was able to have this time to be here. Besides serving in juvenile child protection, I've done just about every type of case that comes across the district court. I've also had some administrative experience serving 4 years as a chief judge in the second judicial district. That's handling more administrative work. So I just wanted to share my background with you in that regard. I want to talk a little bit now about the District Judges Association. The District Judges Association is the professional association of Minnesota judges. The dues-paying members include virtually all of the district court judges, many court of appeals judges, and a couple of Supreme Court justices. I say dues-paying members because senior judges or retired judges belong to the organization at no expense. So the dues-paying members, as I said, are almost all of the district court judges, a couple Supreme Court justices, some court of appeals judges. The organization has been in existence for over 70 years. As I said, my full-time job is a district court judge, but when I became president of the District Judges Association, I received minutes going back to 1947. I won't tell you that I've read all of the minutes, but I've looked at some of them. It's very interesting. And the organization has been in existence for over 70 years. I was reading minutes from about 50 years ago in the 60s and 70s, and some of the minutes talked about the importance of the relationship with our legislators and the contact at the legislature. So this was going on even 50, 60 years ago. There's basically three main purposes or functions of the District Judges Association. Along with the Judges Foundation and State Court Administration, we assist in the education and training of judges. I'll just give a plug to my good friends at State Court Administration and Judicial Education. We've taken a lot of judicial education in-house. Okay, there used to be, I think I was one of the last judges to attend a three-week training program in Reno, Nevada at the National Judges College, 3 weeks for new judges. And my husband and kids came in the 2 weekends in the middle week, but it was a 3-week training program. We do all of that internal now. We have a very strong education committee at state court, and they work in conjunction with our Judges Foundation and Association. So that's one of our main goals or purposes. We also have many active committees. Judge Jasper is going to talk to you in more detail about a couple of those committees, pensions and benefits and elections. I want to highlight just a couple of committees, and that's the civil and criminal jury instruction guides. Anytime, I'm getting a nod, lawyers know what the jury instruction guides are. And when you try a case in the state of Minnesota, either in civil or criminal, you use jury instruction guides that are consistent throughout the state. They're modified or tweaked for the individual type of case, but the guides are consistent. I mean, it makes sense that they're consistent throughout the state. So if you're trying a case in Anoka or Ramsey or Beltrami or Rock County, your jury instructions are the same. So our citizens are getting the same interpretation application of the law. Those committees are Minnesota District Judges committees that put together those books. I was actually going to bring my volume 10 of the criminal jury instructions, but I didn't want to transport it from my courthouse a mile away here, because I've got it tabbed and marked, and I just didn't want anything to get moved. When I try a case, the first thing I do is go to the jury instruction guides, because it's the district judge's responsibility. So I didn't bring the book to show you, but again, I wanted to emphasize that that's one of the very important committees, and that's very important work done by the District Judges Association. Really, the third function or purpose of the organization would be to assist with information to our friends in the legislature. We assist with information to our legislative branch of government, really on three or four issues regarding judicial pay, pensions and benefits, and then the selection and retention of judges or judicial elections. Several years ago, there was some discussion about potential change in the election or retention of judges. The Minnesota District Judges Association had a very active committee in that regard. Jonathan will talk about the Pensions and Benefits Committee and a little bit more about elections. The Elections Committee, the other thing they addressed was there was some talk about removing the incumbency designation for judges. Again, that was our committee that was very active in that regard as well. Our goal is to be a resource for you. As I said, when I was reading minutes back to the back in the 1950s, MDJA talked about the importance of having a positive relationship with our legislators, offer help where we can. And I'd like to say that we're continuing with that purpose, with that goal. One of the things we can do is offer ride-alongs to you, either in your with a judge in your district or in Ramsey County. My courthouse, on nice weather, I walk here. Today, I drove. But when it's nice, I'm close enough to walk. I've had legislators in the past sit with me in child protection, doing delinquency. We also have a number of treatment courts in the 2nd Judicial District. I know we've got a graduation today from our Veterans Court. But I'd be happy to arrange ride-alongs either in the 2nd District or with judges in your district if you're interested. The District Judges Association does not take a position on policy issues, obviously respecting the separation of powers, but we sure would answer questions regarding any concerns you might have or questions you may have about the impact on judges. I want to conclude my comments by indicating that in preparation for today, I reviewed Mr. Shorba, Jeff Shorba, our state court administrator. I know he presented to you last week. His PowerPoint is excellent. It gives you some really good information about the judicial branch, about the number of cases, about what judges do. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'm not going to comment on it other than to say it was very good. And there was some real good information in that PowerPoint, and I know that you have it. Frankly, we didn't prepare a PowerPoint. I wanted this to be more informational and conversational. The other thing is this is my master calendar week in child protection. It's extremely it's an extremely heavy calendar, so my focus, frankly, was being prepared for those 80 or so families I'm going to see this week and not on a PowerPoint for you. Mr. Shorba provided you a really good one from the judicial branch. As I said, for over 70 years, the Judges Association has been in existence. In this legislative session, we want to fulfill the role or the purpose and be a resource for you. Just in conclusion, I want you to know every day of my experience as a district court judge, it's been an honor to serve. It hasn't always been easy, but it's been an honor to serve the people of the state of Minnesota. And I know it is for you as well. And I know we all try to do our best and do what's right. I want to make sure that not only in my day job, but as president of the District Judges Association in my spare time, where that falls in here and there, that I'll be available to you as a resource to answer any of your questions, take any comments. I'll take complaints, too. Doesn't matter. That dialogue is real important to us, so we're always willing to listen. Thanks. I moved pretty fast because I want to give Judge Jasper his time. Any questions, though?
Questions for Judge Warner. I have a question for you, Judge Warner.
Mr. Chair?
Is it true that you grew up on the Grumpy Old Men block?
Grumpy Old Men, that's, I could describe it, that's actually orange. It's between Ivy and Hyacinth.
Yeah.
And not on the block, but within a half block there.
Okay.
You know, was it Senator Gene Waldorf? He was closer. I'm showing my age, but he was a little closer. He was on the end of the block. But the Grumpy Old Men block between Duluth and Earl Street on Orange was about a half a block from where I grew up, Lake Phelan area. So
there you go. Because that's the
Grumpy Old Men.
Okay, there's another assignment for the committee. You need to watch Grumpy Old Men. If you're a Minnesota, legislator, okay, where what's her name is out playing in the snow, and then Jack Lemmon has his house down the block from the other guy. That's the Grumpy Old Men block. It's where the stuff takes place if you watch Grumpy Old Men. And the Grumpy Old Men bar, by the way, is Halftime Rec in St. Paul, which is in my district and within stumbling distance of my house. It's a great bar. So I just...
Which bar?
Halftime Rec. Yeah, so thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was sharing with Representative Zhang at a reception that the Chief Justice hosted on Friday that my East Side pride runs deep. I was born and raised on the East Side of St. Paul. I live in White Bear Lake now because I compromised with my husband, who when he and his parents moved from Glendive, Montana, they settled in White Bear Lake. That's where we are now. But my roots in St. Paul run pretty deep. Once an East Sider, always an East Sider. Right.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Jasper?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And as I said earlier, my name is Jonathan Jasper. I'm a judge in Anoka. This is all the voice I have, so if I'm leaning into the mic, that's the reason for it. The one part I left out earlier is I live in Representative Scott's district, so I have familiar faces here. Several of you I've met in prior years. As a judge, I'm a general jurisdiction judge, and in Anoka County, what that means is we do everything. From juvenile to family to big civil cases to criminal every day. So my experience runs that way. I've been a lawyer for over 30 years. I've been a judge for 13 years. And you talk about grumpy old men or distinguished judges. That's what this did to me, is I had a full head of hair that was dark 13 years ago. And I don't know if John Holquist is still here, he'd swear to it. Anyway, I chair the Pension and Benefits Committee of the Minnesota District Judges Association. And we, as much like it says, we deal with pensions, benefits, and pay for judges and those issues that come before you all of the time. We try to help people be problem solvers. You've got so many competing priorities, and we're very well aware of that. But we do have some very deep concerns that we've worked with. Our pension was in trouble, for example, years ago, as was every other pension, right? And we spent a year in meeting with the Minnesota State Retirement System, with shareholders, with economists, with the people from our bench, trying to figure out how do we fashion a solution to that. And once we'd come up with a solution, then we went around the state educating judges and worked with the Judicial Council, got people behind a solution, and then brought it to the legislature. And working with the legislature, managed to do that. All of our pensions are underfunded right now, but Aaron Leonard, who's the chair or the director, I'm going to come up with the wrong name here, executive director of MSRS, meets with us regularly and tells us we're in good shape. So my first point is going to be on pensions, do no harm. But the kind of solution, you know, problem solving that we went through is judges took 1% off their pay raise to put into the pension. The employer's contribution to the pension went up. And then for newer judges, because judges are living longer and spouses are living longer, the multiplier for newer judges was reduced from 3.2% to 2.5%. And post-retirement increases for judges was reduced. And what that did was it was a sharing of the pain. Retired judges had some pain. Active judges, future judges, we all participated. And we sold everyone that that's the only way to deal with this kind of a problem. And then we worked with the Pension Commission, and we worked with the legislature, and we did a good job. Erin Leonard tells me she believes that our pension is as healthy as any in the state. It has some unique challenges because it's tiny, right? We're not thousands of members. We're a little committee, or a little pension, and we appreciate that Ms. Leonard will spend so much time with us, and Dave Bergstrom, her predecessor, did as well. But we also have the problem that our pension is the only one in the state that was not pre-funded. For years and years and years, the state was paying out to judges or accruing liabilities to judges without putting aside a fund, like we all do now, which is, right, that's what got so many other places in the world in such bad trouble. As part of this reworking of our pension, the legislature also approved and there's a cash infusion that's kind of making up for that not pre-funding until we can get it funded. The other thing, and you'll have to excuse me, but I have to drink. I'll try not to look like Marco Rubio as I do it. as it relates to pay increases, what we've done for many years, before my time, is seek out and get the assistance of independent economists from the academic community in Minnesota to help us determine what is an appropriate pay for judges. And we've worked with those economists, and there have been several over the years. You have in your packet a report by Dr. West from St. Catharines University, and then an update of that report from Dr. West, assisted by a master's candidate from the University of Minnesota, whose name escapes me, and I apologize. But they did a lot of work for us. We don't pay them. We ask if they're willing to do it. It's a pro bono effort. It's not an advocacy effort. But what the Compensation Council, because I know some of you are newer, the Compensation Council is set up by the legislature, by statute, to review the compensation of certain offices, executive offices, and the judiciary. And they have separate meetings that we've gone to, we've talked to, for constitutional officers and district court judges. And there's a statute that says they need to consider the amount of compensation paid in government service, similar jobs, private practice, similar qualifications, the amount of compensation needed to attract and maintain a experienced and competent bench, and then the ability right within the budget of the state to pay for those things. And one of our concerns, and I'll get into lots of details with you privately at another time or when you're going through your budget stuff, I won't go through all of that right now, but I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm happy to do that. But basically what we're trying to do is make sure we maintain the quality of the bench in the state of Minnesota. The National Chamber of Commerce rates judicial systems from the point of view of tort system reform and how well the system works. And we've constantly been rated in the top three or four in the country. We've got a good bench. Part of that is attracting good people. What the Economist report will tell you is as our pay has kind of fallen within the, you know, the community, that becomes a little harder. Anyone who takes this judge job does it for public service, and we do it for the purpose of public service, and we know there's a financial sacrifice. The question becomes, the farther we fall behind, the more sacrifice we're asking people to make, and at what point are we losing good people? And we think we're at that point where we're losing good people who won't apply, and we've got examples of people retiring. Because, you know, we all have kids in college, and we have all those same expenses you have. And I was appointed in 2005. In real dollar numbers, today, my salary has gone up in 13 years, $4,000, about 2.5%, 3%. And that's because we had a salary freeze for years. We had some small increases. Last biennium, we had 2.5% and 2.5%, which actually fell below the rate of inflation. So the ask we're going to give you later, and I'll go through it all, and it's in those reports, is at 5%, and that's what's necessary to try to get us toward competitive, according to the economists. But we work with the economists, and we work with that. Older judges, you know, to me it's not that big of a deal going forward how much money I'm going to have, right? What it's about is maintaining the integrity of the system and making sure we're getting the best people to maintain that system. And we have a good bench. You should be very proud of the judicial system. You should be very proud of the support the legislature has given to the judicial system. And that's why we're here, is to say we want to continue that. We want to help you. We want to be a resource for you privately, one-on-one. I've met with several of you, but several I haven't. Any other point. We're not going to go through all of the data points. You've got the Compensation Council report. and the two economists' reports. The Compensation Council had actually suggested that last biennium we get two bienniums ago there was no Compensation Council. The legislature didn't appoint one. So they never met. But the last one suggested we should have gotten 3.5% and 3.5% last year and 4.63% and 4.63% this year because of the lower raises that were actually involved. That's why, to make it up, the number actually gets higher. But I encourage you to read those. Those people have taken a very critical look at what it takes to maintain this, and that's what we do. So I want to talk to you more. I'm happy to talk to you more. I'm happy to get involved. But those are the things we're working on. Tracy had mentioned we have an elections committee. To the extent that elections issues come up, you'll go. I was on. I'm no longer on that because I'm way too busy trying to understand all the numbers in my committee. If I was good at math, I wouldn't have been a judge. So, but right, anyone who's gone to law school, that's not a math thing. But the elections committee, Lois Conroy from Hennepin County is the chair, and they've got all kinds of data about election issues and issues that might come up, and she too will be around and happy to answer questions about that.
Thank you, Judge Warner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think we've gone over our allotted time, but I do want to thank you again and let you know that we appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. But to be a resource for you, I know you're going to have issues coming forward. I want to be respectful of your time. If you have any questions, great. Otherwise, we'll let you get on with your agenda.
Thank you, Judge Warner. I do have a question. First for Judge Jasper. I wonder, talk to me a little bit about, I see in the Metro, judges' salaries, which are uniform statewide, correct? Have a lot less buying power in the Metro due to cost of living, cost of housing, etc., than you do in some of the greater Minnesota judicial districts. And yet we still have people lining up, I think, to be judges, right, in the Metro, second and fourth, and some of the other districts, compared to, at least my understanding is we're begging for quality candidates in greater Minnesota. Is that accurate, or am I mistaken about that? If I am right, what's the deal there?
Well, my understanding is very similar to yours. We've got pools of candidates in the cities because there are so many lawyers in the cities. The question is the quality of the pools we're getting. Are we getting the same quality pools we were getting before? Outstate Minnesota, where you've got an opening and you've got a large rural area with very few lawyers, we're out begging for people to apply. We're trying to recruit people to apply, and that's become a real problem for the state of Minnesota. But just because of the mere numbers, right? I'll give you the example. I've got 16 judges in Anoka County. There are, I think, 50 or 55 or 60, I'm not sure, in Hennepin County. But there's got to be 20 times more lawyers. And so you got people lining up. And I should also disclose, I'm married to a judge. We were married before either of us were judges. But I'm married to a judge who is a public defender. And what we're seeing is a lot of applicants from the Office of the Public Defender and from the prosecutor's offices because they're already public service and the financial sacrifice isn't the same. But the key to an effective bench is balance. Right, is having some of those people who are criminal specialists, but having others as well. But you're correct in your assumption that the state salary is consistent statewide. I've not looked specifically at it. My understanding is that's constitutional. A district court judge makes what a district court judge makes, and then that number is set by you. So that's my understanding. If it helped, I hope that answered.
It does help, Your Honor. And then also. My impression in, I practiced exclusively in Ramsey County for 15 years and then went into private practice and started practicing in some other judicial districts, other counties, and I had some eye-opening experiences about the way things operated. And my impression is, maybe you'd still have all that hair if you were in a rural district or something. I feel like the jobs out there are less stressful than they are just based on calendar volume.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that isn't necessarily true. I'll just give you an example. I have a good friend who's in Beltrami County in Bemidji, and we talk sometimes. We're both early birds, so we'll talk at 7:30 in the morning before our calendars. And I was telling her I had to cut a conversation short because I had I was going to see 20 families that morning on a child protection calendar. And she said, oh, poor you. I've got 22 plus 8 omnibus hearings on a criminal calendar and one other hearing just in a half day. So the way their calendars are structured, no, it's not necessarily lighter. You know, then there's travel time that gets figured in there too. But I don't know that I'd want to do some of the calendars that our colleagues do in other districts. I'm thinking of Pine County in the 10th. I've got a couple of friends who are in that district, and I know what they do in a day. And it might not be 20 child protection cases, but it might be 10, and then a minor settlement, and then some criminal omnibus hearings and something else, and you're jumping back and forth. That's a typical day for many outstate judges.
Well, fair enough. I appreciate that input. Yeah. Representative Johnson.
Chair Les, Judge Jasper, thank you for coming here today. We have great judges across the state. The vast majority are wonderful. They do their jobs very, very dedicated to their work. You brought up the elections committee that you have put together and the appointments by the governor and the Constitution. The question I have, how do you work this out? The Constitution says the people will elect their own judges. And you in the 10th Judicial District, you understand the pick counties. It's four counties that share the same 3 to 5 judges. The way the elections are set up right now, every single person that votes in those four counties for their judges could vote a particular judge off the bench. Not one person in those four counties vote for that judge. But because it's by judicial district and nobody knows who these judges are, people outside our area elect our judge. I'm just wondering if you could figure out a way to set that up so when we elect judges, we do it by the Constitution where the people elect the judge that represents them.
And my understanding, and I'm sorry,
go ahead.
My understanding, I've not got the same expertise there, is the districts were set up long ago, constitutionally, because there were judges that would travel to many counties on any given day. So it was the people from the district. I still travel all over the district. You know, when Stony Hill just up in Kanabec County has to go to a meeting or has a vacation, I'll go up there and handle his calendar, and it's every bit the mess that Tracy was talking about. But there's been that concern. I've heard that. You and I have talked about that concern. But the question is, how else do you do that? Because then the question becomes, right, if one county is elected, if Chisago County picks just Chisago judges, what happens when someone else has to go there? And you should understand, we do a significant weighted caseload study that determines where we need judges, how much we need. And, of course, they can't work out to an even number of judges with each county. And so within our district, we have judges every day traveling to help in other counties because there's a need. You know, if you got a one judge county, if that judge isn't there, we're going to do it. We have four judges up in Pine County. Their need is something like 3.6. So one of them, 40% of the time, is going to be going to another county who has that need. So we do actually cross county lines a lot. But I understand your frustration and your concern. I don't have an answer for you.
Judge Werner?
And that's the issue that we deal with.
Chair Johnson, go ahead.
Because we have two counties that actually elect their own judges. Hennepin is his own district and Ramsey is his own district. Mm-hmm. The rest of the state has people from outside their county and the area that they live in electing their judges.
Thank you. Judge Werner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, members of the committee, we've discussed this, Representative Johnson, and I would acknowledge that the system may not be perfect. You've got people living in Buffalo and Wright County who have never stepped foot in Kennebec County, yet their vote matters. I will tell you the issue of judicial elections is one that we talk about and we think about. How do we better inform the electorate on judges has been an issue that the State Bar Association has addressed. We as a District Judges Association talk about that. Is it perfect? No. You point out exactly one of the problems, but I would urge caution in how you would change it, because sometimes change might not be better. And at least it's a judicial district. You know, when you're down in many districts have one judge counties. In fact, Donna Dixon, who's a judge up north, and Eric Schieferdecker, they're both in the 9th district. They serve multiple counties. Those counties, it goes by population and number of cases. They're so small, they don't even have a judge there full time. But those people are electing the judges in the whole district. And as Judge Jasper pointed out, judges from the district do serve there, but they're not the regular, consistent judge. And it's, you know what, I just think it may not be the best, but it works right now, and it's an issue that we're constantly talking about, as is the State Bar Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quickly, a couple of questions. A, are there any vacancies right now for judgeships in rural Minnesota? And B, what did we do a few years ago? Didn't we have a discussion about where judges had to live? And I don't remember if it was district court judges or there was some discussion we had a number of years ago, and I don't know if that spurs anything in the mind of the judges at the table, but it seems like we had a discussion about something like that. Well, just wonder where that stood.
You do, maybe Judge Moore can address it. I do know, I recall when my colleague Doug Meslow, who came in with me in 2002, many of you remember Judge Meslow now, who would have liked to have been in Washington County, but he lived in White Bear Lake, I think, at the time. But then got in Anoka. He was in Anoka for a long time, and then finally got that slot over in Stillwater, closer to where he wanted to be after about, I don't know, 10 years or something, I think, 12 years. But maybe you can address that question about residency, Judge Warner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, first of all, I'm not sure about vacancies. I think many of you know Governor Dayton, right up until I think it was January 3rd or 4th, was appointing judges. I'm not certain that there are any vacancies in rural Minnesota now. I know there were, but I believe those vacancies have been filled. I'm thinking of two in particular in the 9th district that were filled, but I'm not certain that there are any vacancies now. Judges are required to live in their judicial district. So, Judge Meslow lived, he used to be a neighbor of mine in White Bear Lake, but he lived in Stillwater. The vacancy was in Anoka. The general rule is you know, you go to where the vacancy is, and if you want to move, it's a minimum of 5 years before you can move in a district. But there are judges in many rural or outstate Minnesota communities that live in a county, but their chambers may be in a different county. That happens with a little bit more frequency outstate. Obviously, in the metro area, that's not as much of an issue. But where judges live right now, it's the judicial district, not anything more specific.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may have been Supreme Court judges. I don't know what it was, but there was something about, I remember having a discussion about paying mileage and housing, as I recall.
Judge Warner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Scott, I believe that had to do with the Court of Appeals judges who, and it was for the judges from the congressional districts that were outstate. There's a two-year period of time where they get a travel stipend and a housing stipend, and it was, I believe, I can't remember her name now. Was it Representative Moline, I think, who, yes, where that was expanded. Actually, that law is set to sunset, I think, this year, and I think, well, Mr. Shorba can address that better on behalf of the branch. I think, you know, there's some conversation about how to address that. But that was for the Court of Appeals judges from outstate who need to maintain a residence here as well as their residence in their, where they're from. Yeah.
Thanks,
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add very quickly.
Yes, you go ahead, Judge Jasper.
In the Court of Appeals, most of the judges serve statewide, but there's one assigned that needs to live in each congressional district to give that distribution. So the discussion that was had, and I think was had last week at Judicial Council, continues to be discussed, is if you have a judge who's up from way up on the Iron Range, so they have to maintain two houses to really do their job, should there be some kind of a stipend there?
Yeah. Any other questions? I do have one other question. Oh, Chair Constein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to be real clear, the current salary is $157,179?
Correct.
All right, thank you.
I knew the first three numbers, 157. I didn't know the last three, but that's correct.
And some changes. My question relates to Minnesota Statute 3.16. Okay, Judge Asprey knows what I'm talking about. And it's ironic because I seem to have problems with this in Anoka County. most recently with Judge Logring. And in fact, Judge Meslow, when he was in Washington, insisting on scheduling legislators for court during legislative session. But I don't think it's a well-known statute, and I don't like to bring it up and play the card because it gets a little awkward. But just if we can remember that it's kind of tough to make it to court when I'm chairing committee, that's helpful to know. Any other questions? Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I started in Buffalo and then moved to Anoka, so I went through that whole thing. And when I was in Buffalo, now the congressman from the 6th had an active practice, and I forgave his appearances in court all the time.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. You have to thread the needle on this sometimes. I get it, but holy cow, serving in the legislature while you've got a law practice can be extremely difficult. Seeing no other questions from the committee, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We appreciate the District Judges Association being here to talk about that a little bit. We will be talking about this a lot more when the budget presentation comes up, and we would love to take you up on your offers to do a little ride-along. And for those of you that don't live in, you know, Anoka County or Ramsey County, they can connect you with other judges as well on that, too. So thank you very much for appearing today.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Chair Constein.
You seem to have some knowledge of this. Is there anything that has to do with being on jury duty while you're in the legislature?
Chair Scott.
Yeah, I've been, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been excused from it before, from jury duty, because we're in the legislature.
Oh, I was on grand jury duty all last year.
Oh.
And when I called them, they said, nope, you're still on. I didn't actually get called, but that was nice, and I've actually been on three other times.
From my experience, I've been called up for jury duty, I think more than technically I'm allowed to be under law, but you know, I go and sit there the first day, and if I do get called up on a panel, I get struck right away because no one wants me on their jury. I don't know why. But the managers of the jury offices are typically pretty good about that. They don't jerk your chain too much. But let us know if you run into those issues. I don't know if there's a statute on it. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to the jury duty point, but to your prior point about shadowing judges, I just wanted to reiterate what you had mentioned. In my first term, I had the privilege of shadowing for the day Wright County judges. In my second term, I had the privilege of, not the entire day, I think it was a half day, visiting with the family law judges in Hennepin County. And both of the experiences are incredibly eye-opening to see firsthand the struggles and to hear what the judges' comments are and the struggles of doing their job and trying to balance everything else. So I encourage members of this committee and anybody, all legislators, to go and shadow the judges.
Thank you. Thank you for that comment, Representative Lucero. And as the Minnesota Board on Judicial Standards comes up and takes their seat and gets ready, I would just add to folks that I am just like Representative Lucero stated, very impressed with the jobs that judges do. I will say, I've had people ask me, you know, do you want to be a judge someday? And I say, absolutely not. I don't ever want to be a judge. First of all, you know, I was in seminary where we wore a robe and can only hang out with each other. We had a chamber and everything like that. And so I did my time in seminary. I can't do that again. But it is a bit of a cloistered life. And it is a high-stress life with the decisions that they have to make. And the job is incredibly complex, and it's all on them. I'm very impressed with the job that the vast majority of judges do, and have great respect for them. And we're going to, hopefully this committee will be taking that in consideration when we take up their request, the judiciary's request for budget. So thank you. With that, Minnesota Board on Judicial Standards, please introduce yourselves for the record and begin.
My name is Tom Sipkins. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Minnesota Board on Judicial Standards.
My name is Sarah Besance. I'm the Staff Attorney for the Board.
I will say to begin with that I'm the grumpiest of old men. I actually tried cases in front of Judge Warner's father in the 1970s. So I understand grumpy old men. I am a retired judge. I retired from Hennepin County in September of 2017 at age 70, and I started with the board in November of 2017. It's been a pleasure working at the board. It's a learning experience for me. I'm learning everything all new again, and I have a wonderful staff, all two of them. Sarah works 3 days a week, and John Fuller, who is our jack of all trades, does budget, does technical stuff. He does just about everything, and we are the entire staff for the Board on Judicial Standards. The board itself has been in existence, I think, since the Legislative Act in 1972. We have two purposes, maybe three in my judgment. One is to educate judges and others about judicial ethics. Since my time in this job, I've been to Bemidji most recently, Marshall, Minnesota. I've been to Rochester. I've been to the 4th Judicial District in Hennepin. I've been to Ramsey County. I'm scheduled to go up to Duluth, and I'm trying to set up things with the other three judicial districts that I haven't been to. Our other job is to receive complaints by individuals about judicial misconduct or alleged judicial misconduct, and to consider whether or not to recommend discipline to our board. Our board is a board of 10 individuals. There are 4 judges, 1 appellate judge, 3 district court judges from around the state. We have 2 lawyers, and we have 4 non-lawyer, non-judicial types who are all appointed by the governor. 2 of our people, Bill Wernz, who has been on the board for 8 years, fairly respected former board, Lawyers Professional Responsibility Board Executive Director, is retiring, as is one of our other members, and we're looking for qualified applicants to replace them. Procedurally, if we get a complaint, and we get about 150 to 170 of them a year, Sarah and I take a look at the face of the complaint and decide whether or not, after an initial evaluation, we have a reasonable basis to believe that there is a possible violation of the Code on Judicial Conduct. If we believe that that's true, we go to the board and we recommend to the board that they authorize us to do a full investigation. If that is the case, we will send a copy of the complaint to the judge and ask for the judge to respond to the complaint. And we will conduct a full investigation. We will speak to the judge. We will speak to witnesses that the judge points out. We will talk to other witnesses. And then we will go back to the board after the investigation is completed and recommend whether or not the matter should be dismissed or whether or not the board should issue discipline. We permit the judge to appear before the board, with or without counsel, to talk to the board about the events that are contained in the complaint, and to make a case as to why the matter should be dismissed or why the discipline should be less than perhaps staff has recommended to the board. The board has basically four options. It can dismiss the case. It can issue a non-disciplinary letter of caution, which is kind of a guide to future conduct. It can issue a private admonition, which we call discipline, which is for isolated, non-serious conduct, and then we can have a public reprimand as well. If we issue a public reprimand or a private admonition, the judge has the opportunity to request the Minnesota Supreme Court to appoint a three-person panel to take testimony, and the board has to prove at such a hearing that there has been a violation by clear and convincing evidence. If there is a private admonition and there is a hearing at the private admonition and the board loses, the board has no opportunity to appeal, but the judge, if the judge loses at the private admonition hearing, can appeal to the Minnesota Supreme Court. Either party can appeal from an adverse decision in a public reprimand situation. Since I've been on the board, we've issued...
I'm sorry, Mr. Sipkins, are those appeals in the private circumstances, are they public?
No.
Okay. And then my second question is,
okay,
how often do you lose or win on those?
I'm not sure I can answer that question, but we haven't won since my second day on the board. There was a private hearing, and I can't tell you what the result was.
Understood. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
One of the things that Sarah and I do to fill our time, and we are busy, we spend a lot of time responding to judges who ask us questions about whether or not they can do something ethically or not. And I think that since I've been on the board, which is 14 months, Sarah and I have issued written opinions, informal advisory opinions, probably 125 of them. So the judges at least trust us enough, I hope, to continue to call and ask for our opinions about whether what they can do and can't do is appropriate. We have also issued a couple of formal opinions to judges, one appellate judge, one retiring judge, which are actually board opinions. And we have issued one public reprimand this past year to a judge who got a DWI and then abused the privilege or the prestige of the judicial office by indicating to the officer that he was a judge in Ramsey County, and he has since been defeated in his election. In sum and substance, that's basically what we do. We have a new practice which was instituted maybe, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, where Sarah and I, after an evaluation, can summarily dismiss a complaint. We do that if the complaint is about a law enforcement officer, court administrator, other people over whom we have no jurisdiction, guardians ad litem, probation officers, and so forth. In addition, we are not the Court of Appeals, and many of the things that we see are essentially appeals from judicial decisions. We are more interested in how the judge says what the judge says in a demeanor basis than we are in what the judge says. And so that's basically what we do. That is a change. And so to the extent that we have 150 complaints a year, I think this year we have opened, or in 2018, I believe we opened 40 files in which we actually did a full investigation and made recommendations to the board.
Mr. Sipkins, of those 150 complaints, is there a type of proceeding or a type of case for which you receive a majority or a plurality of those complaints?
I would say most of them, well, I can tell you this. We get a lot of self-represented persons, pro se persons, who file complaints with us, and those are usually complaints that relate to family court matters, juvenile court matters. We do get complaints from other judges about other judges. We get complaints by litigants. We get complaints from prosecutors. We get complaints from public defenders. Most of the cases that we dismiss are cases over which we simply do not have jurisdiction.
Okay, thank you. The reason I asked is this committee also handles family law cases, and some of the most animated or passionate testifiers before this committee relate to family law, custody, child support, and so I was kind of wondering if that passion extended to complaints about judges who were sitting in their proceedings.
Well, I did a few years as a family court judge, and I understand the passions, and we're talking about children usually, and that's what the passions are normally about. And so I would say that a percentage majority of the things that we see that we dismiss are basically appeals from family court judges' decisions.
Thank you. Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for your presentation. I'm just kind of curious about the cases that you say you have to dismiss because you don't have jurisdiction. And I'm wondering, from the point of view of the complainant, what do they get back from you? And in particular, you know, I'm assuming most of the people who are making these out-of-jurisdiction complaints, you know, they're looking for some kind of relief. They don't know who to go to. They've picked you for some reason. And I'm wondering, do you give them some direction about where they should go? Do you, what would they get back? Because, you know, you know, if it's about a guardian ad litem, do you direct them to somebody else? Or if it's an attorney, do you direct them to someone else?
Mr. Sipkins.
We have templates that we respond to the complainant in which we try to explain why we don't have jurisdiction. I think in some of those templates we indicate particularly that they should go to the Court of Appeals if they have an issue and they're timely. But other than that, I can tell you this, and this is one of the interesting things about our job. If we summarily dismiss a matter, it goes to one of our board members, and that board member reviews the decisions that Sarah and I made to dismiss the matter. We see maybe 10 or 15% of the people that we have dismissed come back to us time after time after time after time. We spend a lot of time on the phone with them. We try to explain to them what their rights are and where they ought to go and why we don't have the solution to their problem. And frankly, we spent a lot of time on the phone with those people.
Thank you. Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I can easily imagine that because I'm sure that a lot of the people who are complaining are, you know, maybe, I'm sure a certain number of them may be people who are not right with the world for some reason, generally. But if that's 15%, you've still got 85% who are just knocking on the wrong door of those out of jurisdiction. And I'm just thinking from the point of view of being helpful to the public, you know, whether you include or could include just an information sheet that says, you know, here are other places you can go. I mean, it's great that you tell them, flag that something should go to the Court of Appeals. I mean, that's really important so people don't lose their opportunity if they have one. But I'm thinking about, you know, just other kinds of complaints that have to do with personnel who are not in your jurisdiction where there actually might be someone they should be talking to.
Well, there are times when I refer them to chief judges in the judicial district if I think that's a place where they ought to go. There are times when I refer them to other areas, I think like the guardian ad litem group and so forth, where there are places where they might get some assistance.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that answer, Mr. Sipkins. Please proceed.
I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any other questions for Mr. Sipkins? Chair Scott.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is something that you can answer or not. It's probably maybe should have been asked of the previous testifiers. But is there any data kept? You know, one of the things that was addressed prior to this was the fact that it's so hard for the public to find out information on judges' rulings and those sorts of things. And it's always the back of your ballot when you go to vote with the judges is always the hardest thing. People just don't know how to vote, and so many times don't vote. But I'm wondering if there's any data kept on when judges rule outside of the sentencing guidelines, if they deviate from those. Is any of that data kept anywhere?
Mr. Zipkin.
That might be a way of measuring at least one piece of that.
I think you probably have to ask Jeff Shorba that question. I don't know the answer to it. They keep a lot of data on a lot of things, but we don't.
Okay. Thank you.
And sure, Scott, Judge Warner knows the answer to that, too, so maybe you can connect with her offline on,
okay,
on the answer after committee. Any other questions for Mr. Sipkins or Ms. Bezons? Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in today. We appreciate it. We look forward to your presentation later on for budget purposes, and thanks for the service you do for the state of Minnesota.
It's our pleasure, and thank you for your kind listening, and we look forward to coming back.
Wonderful. Members, I would point out, too, that these are complicated areas, and, you know, especially it's a separate branch of government, the judiciary is, but there is this weird joint jurisdiction. We fund them, and we have oversight over them as well, too. So keep that in mind. It can get complicated, but it's really important, especially for many of your constituents. I'm sure the new folks that are here, it won't be a few months before you get a complaint from a constituent about something that relates to action taken by a judge, whether the complaint is about the judge themselves or something else that they did, because they're issues that folks are pretty passionate about. Members, tomorrow we have a presentation from the Uniform Laws Commission. So Mr. Tennyson will be here to testify on that as well. So those of you who have heard of a Tennyson warning, it's named after him. He hates that, by the way, the idea that they named that after him. But he was a long-serving legislator here in the state legislature, and the Uniform Laws Commission is an area that you'll be seeing bills related to it coming in this committee and others. So with nothing else before the committee, we'll see you all tomorrow. Committee is adjourned.